All right, welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. I am your host, Brendan Farrell, and I am again joined by James Murphy. James, how are you?
I'm doing very well. FYI for the folks at home, we are coming from you from a very toasty studio. So we're trying to hold our own here.
Yeah, all of a sudden it is, it's like borderline summer. Like I saw in the forecast today, it's supposed to touch 90, and like I was just not emotionally prepared for that.
We are reaching the point of the year that I describe as the point where it feels as if you're walking out into a bowl of soup.
Yeah. Yeah. Spring is a weird season because at certain points it's not warm enough for you to feel like it's spring, and then all of a sudden it gets warm enough and then it's like over.
Well, it's one of those things where summer down here is longer and spring, I'd say spring lasted a good 3 weeks, but I think weather-wise we're pretty much, with the exception of the rain, we're pretty much in summer.
Yeah, no, I'm coming to grips with, like, it's going to be really hot for, you know, 6 months. You know, it's fine.
6 months, that's right. I forgot this goes into, like, October.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about the weather. At least I don't think so. We're here to talk about Ole Miss and, you know, perhaps some Mississippi State athletics as well. I think I'm going to start with the draft because I don't know. It was a big weekend for Ole Miss at the NFL draft. I mean, it was, as always, it was a big weekend for the SEC at the draft. And according to our guy, Michael Katz, Ole Miss set a new program record with 8 NFL picks in the 7-round draft era. The overall school record for selections in a draft in the common era since 1967 is 9. But they had two first-round picks in Walter Nolan and Jackson Dart. So, interesting weekend for Ole Miss.
Very much so. Just kind of breaking down each of the picks. I will always support a wine pick in the first round. I am one of the many who believes in winning with the tip of the sword, and Walter Nolan showed that he was probably the best of the bunch. He had excellent combine scores. He was really impressive at Ole Miss's pro day. And Jackson Dart to the Giants. First of all, hello viewers, fellow New York native here. This is going to be fun to watch. Seeing Jackson Dart with the New York Giants, that is going to be a, first of all, that is a very, very interesting quarterback room between him, Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Tommy DeVito. So yeah, quite the who's who heading into the 2025 season. But just from a program standpoint, I think it's a point of pride looking at this if you're an Ole Miss fan. 8 picks and just being able to show, well, first of all, the transfer portal strategy works, even though you weren't able to get as much out of it in season, which they know and they'll probably work on. It's clear that it works because of how valuable each of those guys that you got to transfer in are in the eyes of pros. So definitely a sign that you're doing something right in Oxford.
Yeah, Ole Miss has multiple first-round picks in the same draft for the 4th time in history, and the first since 2016. I'm just looking at Michael's coverage, and yeah, just a really fascinating opening night of the draft this year. And listen, heading into the draft, my whole thing was like, I refuse to be gaslit into thinking that like a second or somebody other than like Shador and Cam Ward were going to be taken quarterback wise. And joke's on me, because there was indeed a second quarterback taken, and it was Dart, not Shador Sanders. So, yeah, I mean, it's just fascinating because I felt like, you know, over the last couple of months, people were starting to get, like, higher and higher on Jackson Dart. And I'm like, I just refuse to believe that this is – that Jackson Dart first-round pick is going to be a thing that happens. But it did.
How much do you feel like Joe Judge being on Ole Miss's staff had something to do with this?
Not a ton.
I wonder. It's about who you know.
How do you feel about Jackson Dart, NFL quarterback?
Well, if he was going to be an NFL quarterback, he was going to need to go into a position with support. And I think on paper, that's here. You know, he's under no pressure whatsoever to start. Heck, he might go into this QB4, depending on how he looks in the during OTAs and the preseason. But he goes into an environment where, at least for now, there's no pressure. Now, it will ratchet up eventually because it's New York and there's a lot of pressure on everybody. Putting my hatred for both New York football owners aside, which is a very hard thing to do, credit to me, this works. You have got, he'll be able to learn from at least a Super Bowl winning quarterback and just kind of be able to kind of get a feel for the offense and Brian Daboll's scheme, which I assume will be in effect by the time he takes over. In all honesty, it is a pretty good situation to be drafted into.
Yeah, because it's Daboll, I've seen some people say, like, oh, he's found his Josh Allen. And I'm like, let's pump the brakes a little on that one.
One thing I will say that kind of just popped into my head is I'm interested to see how he works with Malik Nabers, because those two know each other fairly well to an extent.
Yeah, no, it's weird to see them on the same team now. I was just thinking about that as well. But yeah, no, Josh Allen to me is one of the more, we'll call him, unique quarterback prospects I've ever seen. I would not say that about Jackson Dart.
Would you say it about anybody? I mean, Josh Allen feels like one of one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of the point, was that, like, I feel like the word often used for Josh Allen is alien, which, yeah, that's Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think my things with Dart is that, like, I just have no idea if what he does will translate to the NFL at all.
Well, I mean, film, I think he does a lot of the things. He does a lot of the little things, and that's something that an offensive mind can work with. And as much flack as Brian Daboll has gotten in New York, even though I think most should go to John Mara and Joe Shane, he is a very smart offensive mind, and he knows what to do on that side of the ball when given decent resources. And when he's not, you end up with the last 2 years where Tommy DeVito and long kick returns against the Indianapolis Colts are ruining your draft stock. But I digress. Well, draft chances, I should say. But yeah, again, I mean, I do think he's getting into a situation where, again, the other thing is there's no pressure. He doesn't have to start right away. Heck, he could probably sit the entire year. I don't know if anybody in around the Giants, certainly not the fans, think they're going to necessarily compete this year. But I think with Dart, and by building an insane defensive line, which isn't Mississippi related, but I just thought it was really cool, definitely it takes the pressure off a lot of people, and I think Dart can benefit from that. I also am curious to see how he handles Dable's playbook.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it. Look, week 17, Drew Lock is a high bar to clear.
Just insane. I will never forget because I think the Giants had, the number one pick heading into the second to last week of the year, and I just remember seeing that kick return against the Indianapolis Colts at home, and I was just like, oh my goodness, they're going to win. They're going to win, and they're going to mess up so much. Now, granted, they drafted arguably the best player and a quarterback with, let's say, a lot to work with. Now, here's what I will say. I do think the biggest thing I'm looking for with Jackson Dart is, how does his late game decision making improve? I think one of the biggest downfalls of Ole Miss last year, arguably the biggest, depending on who you ask, was his late game decision making. I feel like that sack that he took against Kentucky is still haunting him. He made some throws into quintuple coverage against LSU, and most of which should have been picked. And there were just some in the Florida game, because he threw one interception that got overturned, and then the very next play was an interception. So, again, maybe it's a matter of maybe he needs to be in a different system, maybe he needs to be in something else, but whatever the case, late game decision-making's got to improve.
Yeah, no, the meltdown against Florida was tough to watch, for sure. I mean, that's
says the Florida fan.
No, I mean it was just tough because you could just see the emotions on. I mean, you know.
True. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, that was. I mean, sort of my concerns are, you know, stuff between the years. Like, you know, I don't. This is an unfair comparison because it seems like people are much higher on Dart than who I'm about to bring up. But it kind of reminds me of, and then again, this is just lazy helmet scouting. But I think of like Matt Corral, who, you know, came out of Ole Miss, put up really good numbers, got taken. Well, he was taken in the third round. And just next thing you know, he's playing spring football, right? My thing with these guys coming out of the Kiffin system is I'm just like, I have no idea how that's going to turn out in the NFL, right?
Right.
And so I wonder, you know, if you hand Dart a less, I've seen the word gimmicky thrown around. I don't know if I'd go that far. It just seems to me like Ole Miss's offense is very throw ball here, right?
Right. It's very much designed throws where it's kind of, you know, just wait for this guy to cut and then bang.
Yeah, we're going to run a lot of RPOs. We're going to run a lot of play action. We're going to do some, you know, weird wider hash stuff or whatever it would be. So it's just like, I don't know what happens. I don't know what all Dart can do in the NFL because it just seems like so much stuff that you just can't get away with in the NFL that he was doing in college. But on the more positive side, though, I see why people really like Jackson Dart because he ticks a lot of boxes. Because, you know, I remember one of the big takes after this past quarterback class and how well they played coming out of college was, well, are we starting to value experience more? Is it actually good to take these guys who were in college for, you know, and played in college for 3-4 years? And, you know, because I look back and I'm like, well, Jaden Daniels played a lot of football in college, right? Bo Nix played a lot of football in college. To a lesser extent, just because I haven't, you know, there's not a really big sample size on it. But Michael Penix also played a lot of college football, right? Well, in Jackson Dart, you're getting a guy who played a lot of college football, right? Multi-year starter, you know, and he's going to a situation where he won't necessarily be pushed to start in the first place, which is good because God help you in the New York media market, especially as a quarterback.
I can attest to that.
Right. Yes, because you have been the subject of much intense coverage in New York sports. So.
Yes, I have seen how mean the papers get when teams of any kind struggle.
Oh, I can't wait for the first game-losing interception and the incredible wordplay that the New York Post is going to use.
Yeah, that'll be a very interesting day.
So, yeah, no, there's that thing. But I mean, you know, clearly he's got some intangibles. He seemed very well respected at Ole Miss, led the locker room. You know, seemed like he worked his butt off. You know, like he ticks a lot of boxes that you want to see out of a quarterback. He's got some pretty good athleticism. I'm not going to use the phrase sneaky athletic or underrated athleticism because, come on, he's a white quarterback.
Well, he's all, it's a, like his athleticism is also very noticeable.
Yes.
At this point.
Yes.
Like he's been around enough where the athleticism is right there.
Yes.
It's not sneaking up on you at all.
Yeah, no. Like let's stop doing that. He's only, his athleticism is only underrated to you because he's white.
Yeah.
I see this happen all the time.
His athleticism trying to be sneaky is like somebody trying to hide behind like a skinny tree.
Yes, exactly. And you know, tough as nails, right? He granted both complimentary and derogatory, because there are a lot of times where you're like, just go out of bounds or slide, stop trying to run people over.
That is one thing that I think a lot of New York fans will appreciate about Jackson Dart, is he is a gamer, and he, for better and worse, is willing to take hits. Now, the thing, now, did he do, was he taking hits against SEC competition, which was already a pretty tough test of said toughness, but yes. But now he's going up against probably the best defensive line in professional football twice a year, and a pretty solid Cowboys pass rush and Commanders pass rush that might be getting better at the very least.
As a Commanders fan, I feel just like watching the Giants and Cowboys and Eagles load up on edge rushers. I'm very much doing the Simpsons meme of, I'm in danger.
Expanding on the Giants pass rush. Derek Barnes, Dexter Lawrence, Kayvon Thibodeau, and now Abdul Carter is insane.
Yeah. But I don't know. Just anything else you want to touch on with Dart?
With Dart, I think we've talked about everything, but let me raise a question to you. Of the Rebels picked in the draft, who do you think could be the biggest steal and why?
I think you know what I'm going to go with, because I was just about to bring him up.
Go for it.
Let's talk some Trey Amos, please.
Okay. I sense a bit of bias from you.
Gosh, leave me alone. No, I mean, look, it was rather fascinating. The Commanders end up taking Trey Amos at the 61st spot in the second round. And the reason why I bring this up, there are a few reasons. One was, I had seen mocks with him going to the Commanders in the first round, right? So for him to still be there at the, toward the tail end of the second round was, I thought, really good value at worst, right?
Right.
But, I think he's probably going to be pressed into action pretty quickly, because I see a future where, they move Mike Sainristil still into the slot, which is what they originally drafted him to do. And then, they had to move him outside last year due to injuries and people underperforming. And it's like, please, just do your best. Have fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they'll move him inside. And they have Marshawn Lattimore now hopefully healthy and back to some kind of good form.
Yeah, that's going to be a big key for him.
Yeah, and then you have Trey Amos on the other side, right? Like, I think that they can press him into action pretty quickly and be a dependable corner. And I'm excited to see how it plays out, because that was, one of their big needs was that corner. And I was like, well, you have a, fringe first-round talent fall to you at 61 because everybody went psycho on edge rushers and running backs and defensive tackles. So, oops, there's a really good corner that fell to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you agree? Or is there another pick that you really liked?
I lean towards Trey Harris. I think that without the injuries this past year, he is a surefire first rounder, maybe even one of the top wide receivers taken off the board. I saw stuff from him on a weekly basis this summer that showed that was NFL talent, flat out. The guy could do a whole lot, and he works well in an offense that needed something to take pressure off / balance out a run game that the Chargers do rely on heavily. I think he and Ladd McConkey could work very well together. I assume you'd put McConkey in the slot more often and maybe put Harris out on the edge, or just move them around to get whatever matchup you like. But I think he is a big, big boost for that offense. I think he and Justin Herbert are going to get that chemistry going pretty well.
Yeah, no, a couple second-rounders there out of Ole Miss. That's, real solid.
I'd also like to shout out the Las Vegas Raiders, who made a very big backfield pickup during the draft this past weekend. I'm talking, of course, about J.J. Pegues. Shout out him. It's going to be an interesting goal line package.
Yeah, sixth round pick, why not?
Yeah, just him, fullback, Gen T tailback, I formation, goal line or short yardage, and have fun.
I mean, look, you got to, find a way to make the roster in some shape or form. And you know, how many other guys are that big and versatile, right?
Yeah, that's not a very big list.
But yeah, I mean, you know, there are some more interesting ones, you know, like Princely, Umand Mialin going to the Panthers. I mean, that team could use all of the defensive help it can possibly get.
All of the defensive help or just all of the help, period?
Well, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I think that is the opportunity to be real interesting. Yeah, and just a really good weekend if you're a Rebels fan who's like, see, this is, you know, this is good for the program. And if, you know, all of a sudden now you can start saying, hey, you want to come to the league? Great, come here.
Definitely. And I do think, I get the feeling that the 49ers will be able to do something with Jordan Watkins, who, again, at his best, was a real NFL talent. And Chris Paul, I have a feeling, is there to largely kind of revive a pass rush that took a little bit of a step back with Aaron Donald, but I think adding him will make it more interesting.
Yeah, only two schools had more draft picks in the SEC than Ole Miss. Would you like to guess?
I'm going to say Georgia.
Yes.
And I'm going to say, no, not Bama. Bama's got a lot of young guys. I am going to say, what was the other one? Texas.
Ding, 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 ding.
Okay, right. Why did I overthink that? I don't know why.
Well, you see, because I would have thought Georgia, Alabama, but you are right. Alabama has some young guys, and also I forgot to think of, like, the guys who transferred out after Saban left. Yeah, so what a world we live in where Ole Miss has the third most NFL draft picks in the SEC. But, yeah, also it turns out the SEC still has a lot of good NFL talent, who would have thought.
Oh, yeah, it's just the talent has been there. It just hasn't quite – it hasn't translated to in-game, so that's I feel like that's what a lot of the discussion becomes. It's like, oh, they're not doing as well in the playoff. The Big Ten has won the last two national championships. Oh, they're falling off. But the talent's there, and frankly, it's always going to be there because the SEC schools put more money into football than collectively than anybody else, and they just care more as a whole than everybody else. I think as long as those two things are true, you're going to continue to see them dominate the draft because I think it's been the last 25 years where the most draft picks came out of the SEC.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe one of the reasons why they added Texas and Oklahoma was to be able to stay at the top of the conference leaderboards and drafted players because, you know, Texas adds 12 to that count. So,
yeah.
Granted, the Big Ten added so many schools, and it's like, yeah, the SEC beat them out 79-71 in terms of draft picks. But, yeah, it is sort of the funny thing when people are like, oh, well, look at all the guys getting drafted out of both the SEC and the Big Ten. And it's like, yes, but also those schools or those conferences have
all of the teams.
Yeah, like close to 40 between the two.
I think so, yeah. Just
35
wait,
somewhere.
Just wait until the ACC's media rights deal runs out and then they get poached by everybody.
Look, we need pods. We need to do a pod.
Yeah, we do. Yes, we need a pod.
Summer idea.
Yep, love that.
But yeah, I mean, just yeah, I don't know. It turns out the SEC still has hands. Who would have thought?
Yeah, ball knowers would have thought.
So, and I think also it's sort of interesting for Ole Miss in that. The value of coming back to school. It's like, you know, because I feel like sometimes guys declare because they don't want to come back and risk interest and all that. And it's like, well, first of all, have to acknowledge that NIL exists and that, you know, depending on where you're drafted or drafted at all, you might be better off taking the NIL money mm-hmm. and playing, you know, having another year of tape and then declaring for the draft.
Right.
But I mean, also, I mean, you look around, it's not just, you know, oh, Ole Miss grabbed guys out of the transfer portal and rented players for a year, and then they went to the league. Yeah, right. Like that happened with Walter Nolan, but like, and Princely, but like, Dart had been there multiple years. Trey Harris had been there for a couple of years, right?
Big East had been there for a few.
Yeah, I mean it's a mix of both. But I mean a lot of those guys were guys who came together and said, hey, we want to run it back, and turns out they still got drafted. And you know, I mean, Dart surely went higher than he would have gone last year. So.
Oh yeah, and I think it's almost, and this goes for schools. This goes for a lot of schools, not just Ole Miss. But I think it will set a precedent of wanting to come back to school for more years just to be able to get that, because I think as time goes on and NIL and the transfer portal get bigger, I feel like pro teams will start to value, I think pro teams will start to value guys with more experience, because you're seeing immediately the results pay off. You've talked about Jaden Daniels, and you talked about Bo Nix and Michael Penix. And I know Penix doesn't have a big sample size, but what we have is very impressive. And I think we're going to see more of that, and we're going to just see that pay off. And I'm excited for that, because I feel like it'll improve the product on the field immensely.
Yeah, and I think also, I feel like right now people have a hard time finding players to root for, because especially if you're like a fan of a smaller school, you know, you can root for a guy, they ball out for a year, and then they hit the portal.
Yep.
Right? And it's hard to get attached. And so I feel like if there's a trend toward people staying in school longer, I just feel like that's good for everybody.
100%.
But yeah, just anything else you wanted to add draft-wise?
Draft-wise, that's about it.
And then just real quick, you were in Oxford this past weekend.
Yes, I was. I went out to Swayze Field for game one of Ole Miss's series. They were number 23 at the time I went there. They won the first game of a three-game series against number 9 Vanderbilt.
Yeah, how was it?
It was pretty good. I was impressed with how they played. I think it was a very big series. And although I think Ole Miss is fairly comfortably in the college, in the postseason field, barring absolute disaster, I do feel like it was important for them to build momentum. And they know that they need to do that. Like, one of the biggest things that I believe it was Mitchell Sanford said after the game was, we're trying to build momentum, and this is how you do that. Now, tough loss yesterday, but you take the first two of a series against not only a top 10 team, but also one of the best programs in all of college baseball. You come away from that feeling pretty proud. Hunter Elliott, Tupelo native, did a very good job just making the right pitches when he had to and just being able to get out of jams. And the hitting was able to do enough. I was really impressed by a lot of their on-base numbers. You know, they hit for, I think they have like seventh most home runs in all of the, in the country. You know, they were able to take advantage of mistakes, and it was the start of what I feel like was a very impressive series for the Rebels.
Yeah, I mean, this is more so for our high school podcast, but it was a good weekend to be a pitcher from Tupelo.
100%.
But yeah, it just seemed like Ole Miss pitched it really well the first two days of the series, and that's really all they needed.
Yeah, again, it's moment, because like by the time you get to Sunday, you run out of gas, and you're just trying to make sure you put up a competitive effort.
And they did not.
Yeah, that was tough.
But yeah, I mean, the first 2 days, 15-4,
very impressive. You come away from that feeling pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, it's that time of year where we're getting closer and closer to the time of year where you want to get hot at the right time, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's always, you know, always good to have a nice night at Swayze, right?
Yeah, good for that, and just good to keep the momentum going.
Meanwhile, just a little It's So Over, We're So Back update on Mississippi State. I think it's over.
It is. Tough effort with Auburn, just a lot of the kind of the same things that we've been talking about for most of the year, where it's just not making the right pitches, not making the clutch hits, and I really think that's all it comes down to. I am fascinated to see how they handle Chris Lemonis once the season's over, or if they even wait that long.
Yeah, so they sit at 7-14 in the conference, third to last. It's really next to last, because poor Mizzou, man.
Just insane. And the I believe State goes to Mizzou for their last series of the year. Is that correct?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But
something along those lines.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure at all. Also, there is a positive out of Mississippi State, and that is what I am calling Hunter Hines Homer Watch. Say that five times fast. First baseman from, I believe, Ridgeland, if not Madison, one of the two, is three home runs away from tying Rafael Palmeiro for the school record for most home runs in a career. and they have 12 games left in the regular season, and that's at the very least something interesting to watch.
Yeah, so it is something to keep an eye on, an otherwise frustrating season. Ole Miss right now, 12-9, fifth in the SEC. That'll do.
Yeah, and again, momentum. Just keep that going, and just make sure you're in a good spot heading into the tournament.
Yeah, especially after the last few years, and with not a ton of preseason hype, it's just been sort of fascinating to watch Ole Miss really just rebound.
Yeah, especially with, I think a lot of it goes to Mike Bianco, because I think this time last year we were talking, oh, he's a sitting duck. Hold the phone. They're bringing him back. And credit to him, he's making it pay off.
Yeah, getting back to the standard. It's getting closer at the very least.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, I don't know. Just anything else you want to talk about?
On this, no. But I will use this opportunity to plug my Twitter. I'm at JS Murphy Media on Twitter/X. You can find a lot of my content there. I live tweet games from that account. I put all of my stories on that account, which include game stories, feature stories, and the like for Ole Miss and Mississippi State Athletics, as well as high school sports. It's a busy time of year with softball and baseball. So you can check me out there, as well as a lot of our work at djournal.com.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727 and find all of our Ole Miss and Mississippi State coverage at, I think, all those spots that you just said.
Yes.
So, you're taking over my plug section. So, all right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a good one.